The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are taking on a historical narrative that, well, that has been etched in stone for centuries. I'm talking about the image of the Mongol horde.
Right. The default image is, you know, this purely destructive tidal wave of bloodthirsty, savage barbarians.
Exactly. The idea that their only real contribution to history was chaos.
And that stereotype is so pervasive because it's a narrative we inherited, for the most part, from the people they conquered.
The Persians, the Europeans, the Chinese.
All of whom had very good reasons to exaggerate the destruction and maybe ignore the long-term impact.
Exactly. So our source material today is all about demolishing that one-dimensional caricature. We're diving deep into a re-examination of the Mongol Empire, drawing heavily on the amazing scholarship of Morris Rosabi,
who is really the world's foremost authority on this subject.
He is. And our mission for you listening is to move past the simple military history.
Yeah, and to explore how the Mongols were, in fact, incredibly sophisticated political innovators, pragmatic empire builders.
And the critical agents of cross-cultural integration that, you could argue, laid the foundations for the globalized world we live in right now.
When you really look at what they achieved, the contemporary relevance just snaps into focus. They created the largest contiguous land empire in human history.
Over 12 million square miles? That demands an explanation beyond just, you know, they were really good at riding horses.
Right. It forces you to ask, how do you manage an entity that size? The period of stability they created, the Pax Mongolica, the Mongol peace, is directly linked to this massive exchange of ideas and technology.
And that exchange led the world into the early modern era. So if you want to understand the origins of global trade, you have to understand the Mongols' administrative genius.
Okay, so let's start with the scholar guiding us, Morris Rosabi. You mentioned he's a top authority, a distinguished professor emeritus, known for his biography on Kublai Khan. But what makes his perspective so essential?
I think it comes down to overcoming historical bias. And he does that through some really deep technical expertise.
He's not content to just rely on the standard Western histories or even the biased Chinese court histories, right?
Not at all. He has mastered Chinese, Mongolian, Persian, and several other source languages.
So what difference does that actually make in practice?
Well, it's the difference between hearing only the victim's testimony versus reviewing the administrative records of the ruling power. It's huge.
That's a great way to put it.
Traditional Persian accounts, for example, they focus heavily on the massacres. But when Rosabi gets into the internal Mongolian documents, he finds extensive evidence of tax exemptions for religious institutions, detailed census records,
and pragmatic policies aimed at rebuilding trade routes almost immediately after a conquest.
Exactly. He moves beyond this narrative of pure malice and reveals a calculated, pragmatic state. He offers a 360-degree view that forces us to reclassify them,
not just as conquerors, but as state architects.
Precisely. Which brings us to the core of his work. If we had to distill Rosabi's central argument into a single sentence, what would you say is the engine of their success?
I'd say his thesis is that the Mongols were these complex empire builders whose success hinged on a potent combination of military innovation, administrative pragmatism, and incredible cultural adaptability.
They fundamentally reshaped Eurasia
by prioritizing function over form every single time.
That's fascinating because he argues that the very characteristics we often label primitive, you know, their mobility, living in yurts, their simple diet, were actually highly sophisticated adaptations.
Absolutely. Adaptations to the brutal realities of the Mongolian steppes. If you live somewhere with life-threatening winters and short, frenetic summers, your entire society has to revolve around efficiency and mobility.
Their whole social system was an evolutionary response to their environment. They weren't uncivilized. They were optimally civilized for their environment.
Right. And the scope of this work is vast. It isn't just about the dramatic conquests under Genghis Khan. Rosabi spent a lot of time on the processes of administration, cultural exchange, and eventually their decline.
And his grand conclusion, the big takeaway,
it's that the Mongol Empire served as a crucial historical bridge between East and West. He makes a compelling case that the safety and trade under the Pax Mongolica created the essential conditions.
The explosion of shared technology, the movement of scholars
that were prerequisites for the European Renaissance and the Age of Exploration, they were the unavoidable historical catalyst for global modernity.
It's just incredible. A society forged in such punishing cold developed this organizational genius. Let's dive into the mechanisms that made this engine run, starting with that environment.
The steps dictated everything. The need for constant mobility, the absolute requirement for meticulous resource management, wasting nothing, was paramount.
And that daily struggle developed the skills that made them so famous in warfare. Peerless horsemanship, endurance, that famous cavalry archery.
They were trained in survival, and survival happened to be the perfect training for conquest.
Which leads us directly to the political genius of Genghis Khan, or Temujin, as he was first known. He wasn't just a conqueror, he was a political unifier first.
He took these fractured, constantly warring tribes and turned them into a single, disciplined nation.
And his key innovations were organizational. He systematically destroyed the old tribal hierarchies where your status was based on who your father was.
In its place, he created a meritocratic military. You advanced based on competence and loyalty to him, not your bloodline.
And to enforce that, he implemented a sophisticated organizational blueprint, the decimal system.
Right, the units of 10, 100, 1,000, and the tumen of 10,000.
But the crucial part, as Rasabi points out, is that these units were deliberately mixed. He pulled individuals from different tribes to ensure their primary loyalty was to the central state, not some old clan leader.
It was revolutionary social engineering.
And this state wasn't governed by whim. He introduced the Yasa legal code.
And this wasn't just a set of customs. It was a comprehensive, sophisticated attempt to create universal laws that could govern a vastly multi-ethnic empire.
So if we talk about the military machine itself, their success went far beyond just brute strength. It was tactical brilliance.
Absolutely. Their mastery of the composite bow on horseback was unrivaled. They could fire accurately while retreating at a full gallop.
And the coordination they maintained across huge distances using flags and signals was just light years ahead of their contemporaries.
But here's the crucial point Rasabi stresses. Adaptability. When they faced the massive walled cities of China and Persia, their old tactics didn't work.
They hit a wall, literally.
Exactly. But they didn't give up. They immediately adopted and improved siege warfare. They used captured Chinese and Persian engineers to build massive trebuchets, fire lances.
They acted like an organizational sponge, just absorbing and perfecting foreign technologies at breathtaking speed.
And we have to mention the deliberate use of terror. Rasabi shows this wasn't random violence. It was sophisticated psychological warfare.
Right. Make a horrific example of one city.
And dozens of others surrender immediately. It saved time, resources, and Mongol casualties. It was brutal, but it was pragmatic.
And that pragmatism defined their administration after the fighting stopped. The shift from conquest to governance is astonishing.
They did not try to impose a uniform Mongol way of life across the empire.
That would have been impossible. You have farmers in China, nomads in Russia, sophisticated Persian cities.
Exactly. So instead, they intelligently adopted and modified the existing administrative systems that worked locally.
So in China, Kublai Khan relied heavily on Confucian methods. In Persia, they used the local financial structures.
They used whatever worked best, an immense non-ideological flexibility.
And linking this massive enterprise was the infrastructure, the famous YAM, the postal relay system.
The 13th century information superhighway.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
It wasn't just for letters. The YAM had stations with fresh horses every 20, 30 miles. It allowed for the rapid movement of administrators, intelligence, and troops.
A logistical miracle essential for central control.
And that's what allowed for the political structure that came later, the four successor khanates.
Right. So you have the Yuan dynasty in China, which became very sinicized, the Ilkhanate in Persia, which became Persianized and converted to Islam.
Then the Golden Horde in Russia, which ruled more indirectly, and the Chagatai Khanate in Central Asia, which stayed more traditionally nomadic.
Four different hybrid cultures. There was no single Mongol model.
That adaptability is the definition of a functional global organization, which leads us to the themes that are so relevant today. Let's start with theme one, meritocracy over hereditary privilege.
This is a huge lesson for modern management. Genghis Khan deliberately broke inherited privilege. He elevated people based on competence and loyalty.
For any leader today, the lesson is clear. Organizational success relies on talent driving advancement. If you let status or tenure stifle competence, your structure will eventually fail.
My favorite is theme two, cultural synthesis and adaptation. Mongol rulers adopted local customs and best practices, but they were careful to maintain their core identity.
For any global organization today, this shows that flexibility and respecting local differences are sources of strength, not weakness. Trying to enforce uniformity across the planet is a recipe for failure.
Then there's theme three, religious tolerance as pragmatic policy. They granted tax exemptions to monasteries, mosques, and churches.
But this wasn't necessarily about high-minded principle, was it?
No, it was sophisticated political strategy, pure statecraft, a practical way to maintain stability and co-opt influential local elites.
But that tolerance, even if pragmatic, facilitated this unprecedented dialogue between different traditions.
Gunpowder, printing, the compass moved west, while science and medicine flowed east.
They were the engine of an early globalization. And it gives us crucial context. Interconnectedness is the norm for growth, but it's also volatile, tragically proven by the fact that the same trade routes that brought silk also enabled the rapid spread of the Black Death.
Rosavi's work contains some really powerful conceptual statements that condense this whole revisionist argument. They really stick with you.
They do. One of the core ideas is the Mongols created not just an empire, but a world system that connected East and West in ways never before achieved.
That just perfectly captures their transformative impact. Their legacy is foundational to modern globalization.
And then there's the one that directly challenges the stereotype. Their apparent barbarism was actually sophisticated adaptation to one of the world's most challenging environments.
That's a call for intellectual humility. It urges us to understand societies within their own context.
And the political one about the law. The Yasa represented not chaos, but a sophisticated attempt to create universal laws that could govern a multi-ethnic empire.
It was deliberate political engineering.
And the final one brings it all together. The Mongol Empire's greatest achievement was not conquest, but synthesis, the creation of a truly cosmopolitan civilization.
That refocuses our attention from the destruction to the lasting cultural achievements.
So let's talk real-life applications. If you're running a team or a business, what can you practically take from this?
I think you can absolutely steal the concept of organizational agility. The Mongols were willing to abandon their established methods, cavalry tactics, and immediately adopt superior technologies like siege warfare.
That is the definition of disruptive innovation. Don't be afraid to cannibalize your own successful but outdated practices if a better model appears.
And the power of meritocracy. Organizations can learn from Chinggis Khan's model to break down internal silos by prioritizing talent over tenure or status.
And on the geopolitical side, Rosavi provides this crucial perspective on the globalization paradox. We mentioned the Black Death.
Safe travel and massive exchange meant that when crises arose, they spread globally and rapidly.
It's a stark historical parallel to modern challenges, whether it's pandemics, climate change, or financial contagions. Interconnectedness amplifies both growth and risk.
And understanding their legacy is key. The Mongol model of a highly centralized state profoundly influenced Russia and China for centuries. That historical DNA is crucial for understanding modern tensions.
It connects the dots right up to today.
What surprised me most in all this was the extent of Mongol patronage. I expected pure destruction, but they were incredible patrons of arts, science, and non-Mongol scholars. The economic integration, standardized currency, standardized measures was centuries ahead of its time.
For me, the most valuable lesson is the one Rosavi hammers home. The need to apply relentless nuance to history. The Mongols were a people of immense contradictions.
Both destroyers and catalysts.
Exactly. Brutal destroyers and sophisticated, pragmatic catalysts for a world system. It challenges our comfortable assumptions about who is civilized and who is barbarian.
Rosavi's work forces you to ask, how much of the ease with which we communicate and trade globally today is owed to the administrative and technological reset executed by 13th century steppe warriors?
It's a massive historical debt to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.